Welcome to Joy Connection, your journey to well-balanced living podcast series. Please welcome your host, Ralph Weaver.
Hi, I'm Ralph Weaver, and welcome to EWC Joy Connection, Journey to Well-Balanced Living. When life throws you one challenge after the next, what is it that you do to move forward? Sharon Spencer is a true survivor. In February of 2006, she had a hysterectomy due to fibroids. As she approached age 40, her doctor suggested that she have her first mammogram. She was diagnosed with stage 2A breast cancer. In December of 2006, she had a mastectomy followed by chemotherapy in February of 2007. She lost her hair and developed a hernia and pneumonia. In 2008, she was in a terrible car accident, and as a result, she lost her right leg above the knee. After 22 surgeries and prayers, she learned to walk again. Even with all these hardships, Sharon did not let it stop her. Rather, she persevered and rebuilt a life filled with great joy and happiness. Now, a motivational speaker, Sharon spends her time encouraging others to follow their dreams and passion. Sharon Spencer.
Hi, Ralph.
Hi. How are you? I'm fine, Sharon. It is such an honor to have you with us today.
It is an honor that you have me here. Thank you very much.
So, Sharon, I'm just going to start. I know so much about you and your family, but I want to give our podcast listeners just an idea of who Sharon Spencer is and what inspires her in life.
Well, I'm a single mom and daughter of a mom, a wonderful mother who raised me alone. I have two older brothers. The things that inspire me in life, the number one thing is going to church, and just I enjoy family and friends. I don't have a lot of hobbies at this time. I wouldn't say that, but my main focus and the thing that I get so much joy out of is going to church.
That's wonderful, and I know that's reflected in just your life story and some of the things that we've talked about. But I know your son, I know how proud you are of your son. I just remember him as a little boy, and now to see him as a successful entrepreneur, I know that must give you great joy.
I'm so proud of him. I am so proud of the person that he is and the young man that he has become. And he just gives me, it's just a ray of sunshine. And I'm just so grateful that God has chose me to be his mom.
So Sharon, tell us, I know you're very busy. You have a lot of things that you're doing. What does an average day in your life look like?
At this time, looks like I get up in the morning at 5 a.m. and I head on to my job. I'm now a counselor for mental challenged teens and young adults. I love it so much. I feel so fulfilled and grateful that I had the opportunity to do this. And then I head on to my second job, which is at the Barclay Center. And I deal with the guests at guest services. I'm an usher there. Most of the time I get home late. I come home. If I get the chance to watch any TV, that's wonderful. And I go to bed and start it all over again.
Now tell us a little bit more about the counseling work that you do.
Well, what it is, it's an agency, it's a program, and they come and we teach them different things, different activities. It used to, before the pandemic, it was a place with no walls. They would always go outside. They have changed everything, and now we teach them in classrooms, and they love it. It's just fulfilling to me, and they love me, and I can feel the love.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I would imagine you're a role model for many of these young people.
Absolutely. I let them know, they know everything that happened to me, and they, I try to tell them that you can go on no matter what.
Now, you mentioned your second job at the Barclay Center, but tell us about that, because I know they think very highly of you because you've been on so many television programs, radio programs, and the awards that you've received for your work there. So tell us a little bit about that.
I handle guest services. I deal with the guests. And I make sure that all the season ticket holders are doing, you know, well, they're happy, they have no issues, they know me, I know them, and they like to keep us familiar so that we have a relationship with the people in our section. And it's a lot, it comes with a lot of headaches sometimes, but for the most part, we have a lot of fun. It's a great atmosphere. I watched a lot of the kids grow up now because it's 9 years I've been there. It's a good job. It's fun. It's more fun than anything.
Now, a couple of years ago, if I'm not mistaken, you received an award from the Barclay Center?
Yes. Each year they have a contest called the NBA Values of the Game Award. And what they do is each arena chooses one employee's story. And they send it to Adam Silver and his team. And they get together with all 31 arenas or 30, I think it's 31 arenas, and they make a choice who they decide who the winner is. And the winner flies to Miami. They fly them to Miami. They stay for the weekend. They have wonderful dinners and things planned. And then they have a big ceremony and they decide the winner there.
Well, that's wonderful that you were recognized. And it's, I'm sure it's because of your... Well, number one, you radiate charm, but also your story. But tell us, if you don't mind, when you were first diagnosed with cancer.
Ooh, that first day, it's almost 16 years ago, and I can't believe it's so long ago. It was the first word that I can use is shocked, because I had no signs at all. I had no lump in my breast. I was pretty healthy. I didn't think it was going to be a problem. I thought I was just going to go ace it and go back home. And when I had the two biopsies and I discovered that I was diagnosed with the breast cancer, and I discovered that, oh my God, what am I going to tell my mom? What am I going to tell my son? What am I going to tell my family? That's when it hit me. Like, I was devastated. Like, I can't believe this. And I think you go through the shock for a while. And then I wasn't angry. I wouldn't say I was angry. Disappointed. A little scared. And those were my feelings, you know. My concern was for my son, because he depends on me, you know. Well, depended at that time, no longer, but those were my feelings.
Now, Sharon, how did you get through that period? I mean, what gave you, you mentioned your faith earlier, but how did you get through those difficult times where you were just, I would imagine, questioning or trying to make sure you had the right care? What did you do, and how did you get through those periods?
You know, everybody should have someone that they can go to, a confidant, a family member, you know. And a lot of times I had overwhelming support, but you should always have a person that you can call, you can speak to, that can uplift you. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't have that support system, unfortunately. I think that's so important that you have an outlet. I had a lot of support from friends. The doctor was very open to hear from me a lot. She was a great doctor. I guess that's how I got through it. That's how I got through it at the time.
And Sharon, just help us to understand what you then went through 2 years later when you were involved in the car accident. If you could just tell us what happened and how you got through the next challenge you faced.
Oh, wow. That one was a real, you know, I remember saying to a girlfriend, I don't think this could get any worse after I had the hysterectomy and the breast cancer. And it did. I was out with some friends one night, and a girlfriend asked me to walk her to her car. She was trying to convince me to go out with her and these two guys, which I was not going to do. And I was talking to her, and she was sitting in the back seat, and a drunk driver hit the the car that I was talking, that they were in, and in turn, it pushed me into the parked car, and my leg was just about amputated. And I was by myself because the two guys got out to deal with the guy who hit the car. They were more concerned with the car than they were me. And she couldn't get out of the car because her back was injured. She took the brunt of the back and I took the brunt of the front. I was on the floor by myself for a while, which seemed to be a while anyway. It could have been 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but it felt like forever. And a man just came out of nowhere like an angel God sent. And I was crying. I was in so much pain. And, you know, he started crying. And the next thing you know, the ambulance came. He just kept telling me to hold on, hold on. And I held on and I refused to go to sleep. And the fire department came and took whatever else out of my leg that they had to take out of my leg, the remainder of what was left from the car.
And Sharon, I'm just trying, when I think about what happened to you first with the hysterectomy, the breast cancer, and then this accident, what was it that made you say, I'm going to continue to fight with all of the things that I'm now facing?
No matter who you are, life is going to throw you some kind of lemons. And we all have a choice. You know, I tell the students that I work with now, we all have choices. These choices definitely have to come from us. What kind of person am I going to be? Am I going to be a bitter person? Am I going to be a person that when people come around me, they don't want to be around me, or when I call them on the telephone, they don't want to answer? Or am I going to be a happy person and just be grateful and thankful that I am still here to see my son get his master's? I'm still here to hug my mom and my family. My brothers can call me. I still have life. And when you look at the fact that a lot of people have breast cancer, they don't survive. A lot of people get hit by a car, they don't survive. A lot of people have COVID, they had COVID, they didn't survive. It can always be worse. We don't look at that. We look at what we're going through at that moment. And it is bad. You have a time to grieve, but you cannot stay in that place. You have to force yourself. Nobody can do it for you. You have to dig deep into yourself and say, you know what? This is bad. This is a messed up situation. But guess what? I'm still alive. I'm still here. And I still have my life. And God gave it to me. So I'm going to enjoy the best life I can with the one leg, with the one breast. And that's the decision that I made. I don't want to make anybody else around me miserable. You know, I want to live a happy life. So it's a choice that we make, just like we make a choice in what kind of dinner we eat. And that's what I decided to do. But I felt like I needed to turn to God because nobody understood. And I just found peace in that. You know, it's an indescribable peace that I started getting. And then I realized, oh, okay, this is what's needed, you know?
Yes. And describe that peace, that the peace that you were experiencing.
You know what's funny? Where I stood with the Lord, I didn't know if I was Baptist. I didn't know if I was Pentecostal. I didn't know if I believed in what the Muslims believe in. I didn't know if I was Jehovah's Witness, Seventh-day Adventist, you name it. I went to every single church to find out what I believed, what I felt, what I thought was right. And just as I was ready to give up, because I had been to so many churches with different denominations, I just found the church that settled in my spirit. And I was like, okay, God. And I remember telling my mom, this is the last church I'm going to. I said, Mom, I'm tired. And she said, don't give up. You're going to find it. And I said, this is it. I have one flyer in my drawer from a girl. And I told her I would come. I said, I don't know when I'm going to come, but I'm going to come. And that was the last church I went to. And lo and behold, that was the church for me.
Through it all, I'm sure there were periods when you were just angry. But can you talk a little bit about that during those periods where, and I know you've said that you didn't have a lot of times where you were saying, why me? But there had to have been some, you're only human to have anger as a feeling.
I wouldn't say it was anger, honestly. I would say it was disbelief. I just had a big question mark in my head as to why. Why did this all happen to me? Why am I still alive? Why am I not mad at the guy who hit me? I should be so angry for him driving drunk and hitting me. I should feel all these feelings. But for some strange reason, Ralph, to this day, 16 years later, I can't, 14, I'm sorry, 16 for the breast cancer. I can't understand why I never felt that way. So it was more of a question than an anger for me.
Now, did you ever receive any apologies, or did the law get involved in terms of the person that caused the accident?
Absolutely not. He never got arrested. As a matter of fact, I remember everything because remember I was woke in a lot of pain, crying and screaming, but I still remember looking around and the police gave him water, which I've never drank in my life. I've never took a drink of anything. I've never smoked. So I did not know that if someone was drunk and you give them water, it helps them sober up. I did not know that. I was ignorant. So for whatever reason, they were protecting him. He didn't get arrested, which always puzzled me. And I've never seen him ever again.
To say I'm speechless is an understatement, Sharon, as you just say that, when someone can cause such disruption to someone's life or major life changes and they go on. But it's a testament to you how you have taken such a higher ground or a higher position and not let it just stop your life. And that's why so many people look at you as a role model. Do you feel yourself as a role model? I know you said with the young kids you're counseling today, but do you see yourself as a role model? Because I look at you as one.
Believe it or not, Ralph, I know it sounds crazy, but I don't. I just think, I know I've always been tough and strong. And a lot of times growing up, you know, as a single mom, you have to be. And I've always knew it was something a little different about me growing up, but I never could put my finger on what it was. And I never shared because people would probably think I was out of my mind. Like, what are you talking about? So it's just something I've always known, but I had to do what I had to do to get through what I needed to get through. But other people, they don't look at it that way. They say, oh my goodness, you know, if that was me, and oh my God. And I say, you know what? Let me tell you something. 2 weeks before I lost my leg, I was visiting a girl who lost her leg. And I had never seen anyone lose a limb in my life. And I prayed before I went into the room and I said, God, you know, give me the words to say to her because I've never seen anyone who's lost a limb. So I go into the room and it took me back a little bit. And she was in such good spirits. She was a little younger than me. Her name is Keisha. She was in such good spirits. And when I left, I came home and I remember calling my best friend saying, listen, I saw the girl who lost the leg. She was in hospital for special surgeries. If that was me, I would die. I mean, she said, Sharon, if that was you, you would go on. You have a son. You have a family. You would go on. I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. I would have to live the best life I can live just like that. 2 weeks later, Ralph, I lost my leg. So what I'm trying to say and get across to people is until you actually are put into a situation, you do not know how you are going to handle it. But until you are in that situation, you do not know how you are going to handle it and how you're going to come out of it.
So Sharon, from your experiences, your challenges, it seems as though a whole new life has opened up for you in terms of all that you are now doing, the creative aspects of your life. Were you doing that prior to the accident, or are you just looking at the possibilities and being open to them now?
Absolutely not. These things were not in my plan. I started writing poetry at the age of 50, which I will be 56 in November. So I would have been writing for almost 6 years now. A woman in my church asked me to speak at a fundraiser, which I had been doing previously. And I said, okay, let's do it. I'm sitting home. My speech was very short. And I said, you know what, Sharon, you should make a cancer poem. I said, let me try. I wasn't into writing poetry. I had wrote one poem years ago at my mom's wedding, and she still saved it. And it was a pretty nice poem. And I never wrote another poem since. So I write this poem in like maybe an hour and a half. I read it. It looks good. Sounds good. Okay, let's go. Little did I know, Ralph, that would be the beginning of my poem writing. And I was told I was so good at it that I decided to write another poem about limb loss. And then I wrote a poem about self-esteem. So now when I'm going to speak at functions and churches, I'm reciting this poem and people are crying and they're like, oh my goodness. And I'm like, wow, wait a minute. I can't believe that these poems are so well received. But no, this was never part of my plan. This was never part of my life plan. No, it was not.
And in terms of being a motivational speaker, I mean, were you very outgoing personality that was comfortable in front of a group in terms of what you do today? I mean, tell us how that evolved as well, if it did.
I never thought that, again, this was the assignment that God had for me. I never thought public speaking and poetry would be any part of my life. Yeah, sure. No matter how big my mouth is, I still was nervous, you know, to get in front of X amount of people and tell your life. And, you know, you're being looked at and judged in a way. And then you're given poetry. And that's something that you've never done. That was hard in the beginning. And I got a lot of practice. And now it's a lot easier for me to do it. And I love to help other people. So I don't mind doing it.
Well, I would be remiss in not telling our listeners that you also have an incredible sense of style. You are always flawless in your look. So tell us, I know your fashion sense. Tell us about that. I mean, was that something you always had?
Another thing that was so extremely hard for me, losing my leg, because everybody knew me as the lady with the heels, the lady that loves to dress up, the lady that loves makeup. And I think part of it came from watching my mom, you know, look nice and put together. And what happened was when I lost my leg, I was trying to figure it out. Like, okay, can't wear this, can't wear that. Now I can't wear heels. I have to find a way to be me, to have style. But I do know that now I'm disabled, so I have to do a different way. So I have a wonderful prosthetic doctor who is so just, oh my goodness, he cooperates with me. No one knows I have a prosthetic leg when they see me coming. And I have an adjustable foot. It took a while. It took a couple of years, but I figured it out. And I don't have to worry about sweatshirts and sweatpants and sneakers every day. Like a lot of women don't want to try. They don't want to learn how to walk with the heels. They just give up. And it's just not who I am. So one of the things that I really want to do is I really want to model for Fenty makeup. I want to put her logo on my prosthetic leg and wear like a long gown with a split in it and have my face done with the Fenty makeup and my hair just wild and just show women that are like me, you know, you still can look glamorous. You still can be beautiful. And I also want to show women that have 2 feet and are worried about stretch marks and weight and this and that and having a baby and all kind of things that your whatever your hang up is, because we all have them. Some just don't care to share. So I want them to see that I'm enough. I don't have to go get plastic surgery. I don't have to hide my leg. I don't have to be ashamed. I don't have to be embarrassed over my body. This is who I am. This is who I am. And I'm happy with who I am. I had to learn myself, learn to love myself all over again. And I love myself. And then they see, wow, you know, if this lady can come out and show herself, hey, maybe me being a little overweight is not the worst thing in the world. You know, maybe me having a prosthetic leg is not the worst thing in the world, or stretch marks, or again, whatever your thing is. So I wanted to be, my slogan is I am enough, because I feel like I am enough just the way I am.
That is so powerful, Sharon, because your beauty radiates from within. And just this testimony about I am enough just says it all, that it really, I believe it gives others encouragement and validates of how people often feel but may not share it. So you continue to do what you're doing. I'm just, as we're ending the conversation, and I also want to mention that when you said the Fenty collection, for those of our listeners that may not be familiar, and I'm sure everyone is, but it's the collection, the fashion collection by Rihanna. Is that correct?
It's absolutely correct. And the reason that I chose Fenty is, one, I'm so proud of Rihanna, but I'm most proud of her because she had a friend that had a prosthetic leg. She let her walk the runway. Then she had plus size models walk the runway. That was a testament to who she is. You know what I mean? This girl has a heart. Because anybody that would throw that type of fashion show, you have to have a special kind of heart. I want to choose her to represent her and her makeup line, and pray that she chooses me one day.
I'm sure you are, because with your determination, anything is possible. One of the things that we're focusing on, and the reason why we're doing a Joy Connection, is we ask our guests what brings them joy and what makes them happy. And throughout this discussion, I have sensed the joy and the passion you get from your work. But I wanted to ask you, what do you do to bring joy into your life?
Let me see. Well, the first thing is going to church, because I want him. I never wanted to be, I'm Superwoman. I'm no different than any other woman out there. It's just the grace of God, and it's just my assignment. And he chose me to get the word out to other people. So it makes me happy. Other women will, you know, get up and try to fight when they hear me talk or they hear my story and say, wow, you know, if this woman can do it, I can do it. So that brings me great joy, to help other people. It's like therapeutic. And I love that. I love family. I love my family. And I would just say, I love bowling. I haven't been there, but these things bring me great joy, believe it or not. These are the things that bring me great joy. They mean the most to me.
Well, I would like you to bring our listeners a little bit of joy by reciting some of your poetry. So would you do us the honor of doing that?
Sure. This was my very first poem when I was 50 years old that I started writing, and it's called Treatment. So I'm going to just recite that poem, okay?
Okay.
When you hear the word cancer, it makes you so sad. Some panic, some fight, but most people get mad. You struggle with feelings that you've never had, but treatment is available. So aren't you glad? Oh, the red devil chemo that makes you so ill. The fevers, the colds that leave you with chills. And oh, don't forget the loss of the hair. That is the thing that most women fear. And telling your family while hiding your fears. The feeling of sadness, the fight, the tears. This time next year, where will I be? The sleepless nights and uncertainty. It seems like forever the treatment will last. But as the Lord has promised, this too shall pass. Before you know it, you're over and done. And you say to the devil, ha, this time I've won. When you finish with cancer that made you so mad, you'll walk with the strut that you've never had. When you finish with chemo, proudly take a bow. No hair, no eyebrows, but look at me now. Though I've been through the fire and oh, it was bad. 16-year survivor, and boy, am I glad.
Oh, wonderful, Sharon. You are truly, truly such an inspirational person. Thank you for all that you do and continue to do.
I sure will.
You have touched my heart this day in speaking with you. And I'm sure that that will be the reaction of others that listen to our podcast. But in closing, Sharon, is there anything else that you would like to say?
I will say this. Whoever is in your life that gives you the feeling of happiness and joy when you're going through a situation, no matter what the situation is, no matter if it's a breakup or an accident or the loss of a loved one, you have to surround yourself with positive people. And if you find that the people that you're not around are negative people, then let them go. Let them go because they'll never be good for your journey. You know, the people that you start off with are usually not the people that you finish with. So I always tell people that's so important. That's such an important lesson that I've learned. It's not important about the amount of people, but the quality of people is what really matters. And that's what I leave you with, Ralph.
Thank you so much, Sharon. Those words to live by that we can all embrace and follow. It has truly been an honor and a pleasure to speak with you today. So thank you, Sharon. And you continue to be the shining light that you are for me and others that love you.
I thank you so much, Ralph. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.